Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to one of the most articulate and outspoken criticizers of our current vaccine paradigm. He's Dr. Larry Pilevsky. And Dr. Pilevsky is one of my good colleagues here in New York. He sees kids. I refer patients to him when I can't see them because I don't see a lot of really young kids. We focused on the general issue of vaccination, but so let's talk about some of the downsides to vaccination. First of all, we talk about the bad chemicals that are in there as preservatives. We can enumerate those. That's one category of harm. Another category of harm is that they put things into vaccination, into vaccines that are what are called adjuvants. And they're designed to rev up the immune system. And that's a good thing when you want to build up immunity, but maybe that's not such a good thing when we're talking about hyper excitation of an immune system of a kid who might be prone to some sort of autoimmune neurological disorder or autoimmune disorder in general, or an adult for that matter. And then there's the issue of what's termed the hygiene hypothesis, which is, how many vaccinations can we give to people? Maybe we can categorize all the illnesses that humankind are prey to. And if we were to vaccinate people against all harm, would that be okay for our immune systems? That's one of the sort of hypothetical criticisms of vaccination in general, is that, maybe we don't want to shield our immune systems from any kind of natural stimulus. So maybe we can tackle those things in order.
You got about a day and a half, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay, well, let's...
Okay, so let me see if I can, pare some of that down.
Given the limitations of time that we have.
Yeah. The vaccination program is based on the concept that if you haven't had the disease yet, then we can give you an exposure to the disease by injecting it into your body, either the exact virus or bacteria or a piece of the bacteria or virus, to prime your immune system in the event that you are exposed to someone who actually has the live disease and could potentially give it to you. So by giving the vaccine, you are priming the immune system a priori before the exposure to the person with the disease, so that your body is supposed to be prepared to handle the exposure from the person who's got the disease.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a very sensible idea. Wonder it's so appealing.
Right. But it's based on a very big false premise, on several big false premises. One, it's based on the premise that your body is not exposed to the germ, bacteria, virus, unless you're exposed to someone who's sick with it. And that's false. It's also based on the idea that exposure will automatically make you sick. And that's false also.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be exposed to the bacteria or virus without being near anyone who's sick. And you are almost all the time exposed to the bacteria and viruses without being near someone who's sick, without getting sick. And so what happens if your body already contains bacteria or viruses that we're vaccinating you against by the time you get the vaccine? And the medical community says, well, we can check for antibodies. And if you don't have antibodies, then you haven't been exposed. Well, that's also false, because the textbooks also say, and this is basic immunology, that you can have protection from a germ, bacteria or virus. You can be exposed to a bacteria or virus, be protected from it, and not have antibodies. And so the immune system is more than just antibodies. And so this kind of blows apart the whole idea of vaccination, because it's only based on contagiousness. And it's only based on if you're exposed to someone who's sick, you will get sick. And those are not true all the time. In fact, most of the time. And so what we're starting to see, and I mentioned earlier in the podcast, that their estimations between, depending on who you ask, the 23.5 to 50 million people with autoimmunity. And what we're finding is that not only are we injecting bacterial and viral particles into the body, but the vaccines are contaminated with the whole virus and the whole bacteria. And when you make any injection into the body, you are priming the immune system to see that material in the injection as a foreign enemy. And you're telling the immune system to see it as an enemy and reject it. So you've now created an antagonistic response by your immune system against those bacterial particles and viral particles. And if your body already has those bacteria and viruses as part of your own self, or if there are DNA sequences of the bacteria and viruses that are similar to or the same as the actual tissue that exists in our body, we're going to create an autoimmune response.
Your immune system mounts an attack. It identifies them as intruders, whereas before they may have been sort of lying dormant in equilibrium with the immune system.
Correct. But to take it a step further, if your bacteria and viruses are already embedded into your body, and now you've created that antagonistic response, there's also pieces of the viruses and bacteria that are injected into the body that are similar to pancreatic tissue or brain tissue or joint tissue.
So-called molecular mimicry, that's referred to. Yeah.
Correct. So we're creating, and you know, all the authorities who look at autoimmunity say, you know, wow, the numbers keep rising. And people keep turning around and going, I don't understand why. Well, again, any injection of material into the body causes that immune system to see that material as an enemy. And if somewhere along the line your immune system recognizes that part of your body matches what you've been injected with to reject, you're going to start rejecting your own immune system. And so there's even a whole new spectrum of autoimmune diseases called ASIA, autoimmune or auto-inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants, that Dr. Yehuda Schoenfeld from Israel has been identifying and wrote a book called Vaccines and Autoimmunity. And, you know, it's unheard of for anyone in the dogmatic world to entertain the possibility that we are actually creating these autoimmune diseases, that we're creating the brain neurological problems, that we're creating the immune system difficulties, that we're creating the massive chronic illnesses that we're seeing in children and adults. What's even more interesting is that the underlying pathophysiology of the predominant chronic illnesses that we see is basically mitochondrial dysfunction. And if you look at the biochemistry profile of the materials that we put in vaccines, they are known in the animal studies to cause mitochondrial dysfunction. And so we're again, autoimmunity, mitochondrial dysfunction, neurological disabilities, we're asthma, allergies, seizures, we're just ignoring the science that's there to demonstrate the connection between the injection of these materials and the onset of these disabling diseases.
Yeah, it sounds like the justification being the eradication of these diseases, it blinds us to the potential consequences that you describe. I often get questions on my radio program and from patients and via email. You know, older adults are now being barraged with the demands that they take the Zostavax for shingles or the Pneumovax for pneumonia. And I'm frankly kind of confused because, you know, surely an episode of shingles can be very devastating. Pneumonia, you know, used to be referred to as the old man's friend. It would dispatch you in old age. when you reached end of life, now less prevalent because of antibiotics, but it can be very devastating. So, you know, what's a 60 or 65 year old to do when they go to the doctor's office and says, hey, we want to give you a couple of shots?
Well, again, I mean, we have to look again at the safety profile of the material that's in the vaccines and question whether any studies have shown that injecting any one or combination of those materials into the body is less damaging than a short-lived viral illness. Certainly, if people are unequivocally afraid of disease versus the damage to the vaccine, that is their choice. I certainly wouldn't mandate it.
It's a risk-benefit equation, in other words.
Correct.
Yep.
Correct. But again, the other thing is you already probably have the virus and the bacteria inside your body. So
in the case of the Zostavax, you definitely have the vaccine because it's about varicella or chickenpox, and that's for people who've had chickenpox.
Even for people who haven't had chickenpox, the virus can still be embedded in the nucleus of the cells, in the DNA, in the chromosomes.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 9% of our genetic material that codes for viruses, and another 34% that codes for retrotransposons, which is viral-like particles and retroviruses. So we have at least 43%, if not more, of viral genetic material embedded in our cells. And, you know, we only have about 1.5% that codes for our physical body. So we're much more virus than we are anything else. And, you know, these viral, again, the genetic instructions, the DNA, the RNA, are probably already embedded in the body, doing whatever they do amongst the trillions of other microorganisms that are doing what they do to maintain our health. And, you know, for someone who's 68 years old, you can imagine that they've breathed in probably 93 of 93 strains of pneumococcal bacteria by the time they're in their 60s or 70s. So to think that giving you a vaccine to protect you against a bacteria that you're probably already having in your sinuses, in your throat, or in your airway is preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's well known that the ingredients are going to debilitate your immune system in the first place.
So I think what I hear you saying is, notwithstanding the fact that there may be formaldehyde, mercury, aluminum, you know, known toxic substance, polysorbate 80, in some of these vaccines, I mean, that's bad enough. But just the whole concept of what this does to your immune system may be misguided or wrongheaded and lead us to unforeseen consequences. Unforeseen consequences.
Correct.
That are hard to measure because we don't do controlled studies. We don't take a population unvaccinated and study them versus a population vaccinated over, you know, decades and lifetimes.
But we also don't do any blood testing, or we don't radio tag any of the ingredients in the vaccine and monitor where does it go once it's injected into the body. You know, you have all these girls and some boys, but a lot of girls who are getting the HPV vaccine, and they're reporting all of these neurological symptoms,
mm-hmm.
Postural.
POTS, yeah.
Yeah, POTS. You know,
and I've seen patients like that in my office, and they're devastated.
Right.
They're absolutely devastated.
They are devastated, but, you know, they increase the amount of aluminum and polysorbate 80 in the HPV vaccine. And, you know, polysorbate 80 is a chemical that binds really tightly to aluminum adjuvant. And the aluminum adjuvant is bound really tightly to the HPV viruses and the viral particles. Plus, you know, independent studies have shown that the, you know, HPV vaccines have been contaminated with whole viruses when the vaccine is only supposed to contain some of the particles of the virus itself. But, you know, polysorbate 80 is an emulsifier. It's bound really tightly to the aluminum, and the aluminum is bound really tightly to the viral antigens. And polysorbate 80 can cross the blood-brain barrier the same way a ghost can go through a wall.
Mm.
That's how strong it is to enter the brain. And, you know, that's not – you don't need to be a toxicologist or a biochemist to realize that that's the those are the properties of polysorbate 80. But yet, everyone's looking around, not thinking. No, they could never do that. That's tested for safety. No, it's not tested for safety. In fact, because of the strength of the blood-brain barrier, the pharmaceutical industry has trouble getting drugs into the brain. And one of the chemicals that they use to bind to drugs to get it into the brain is polysorbate 80.
Mm-hmm.
So it's used in pharmaceutical manufacturing to enhance the delivery of drugs into the brain. And it's in the majority of vaccines. And 1 in 6 children have neurodevelopmental disabilities, and there's a growing number of adults with neurodegenerative disorders. How are we not making the link that the polysorbate 80 in the vaccines is doing to the brain just what it does when you deliver it attached to a drug, penetrates the brain?
Well, these are some very devastating facts about the potential for vaccine harms. So what's the practical conclusion? Are we to become all rebels and refuseniks, refuse to vaccinate our children and grandchildren, and then sometimes face all kinds of societal barriers because to go to school, to go to college, to get many jobs, one has to show vaccination certificates. What do we need to do? What do we do? Or are we, well, should we be selective about certain vaccines, or should we pace the vaccine administration, or ask demand mercury-free, aluminum-free vaccines? I mean, how do we go about this?
Well, I mean, there's no such thing as a safe vaccine. So my perspective is that people need to have a balanced amount of information. The studies, so-called, about the safety of vaccines don't really look at the safety of the vaccine materials. So if you weigh the information and say, all right, what's the risk-benefit ratio? What are the chances that this material will enter the brain? What's the chances that this material will destroy your mitochondria? What's the chances that it will go into your immune cells? What are all those chances? And what is the likelihood of you contracting an illness that is almost unanimously short-lived and not dangerous? Almost unanimously, almost all the vaccine-related diseases that we vaccinate against. We can break it down because some of them are not short-lived. But the vaccinations are creating our chronic conditions in this country. And there are people who even say that getting allergies from vaccines is a small price to pay than getting the actual disease itself. And that's an opinion. That's mm-hmm. really not medical science. That's only an opinion. So I would say that people are learning more and more that there is choice, that there is information, and that more and more people are seeing that the non-vaccinated children are unanimously and considerably healthier than their counterparts who are vaccinated. And I hear stories from parents all the time that there are parents around them who look at their kids and go, I don't understand why your kid is so advanced. Hmm. And the thing is that their kids are not that advanced. That's the norm of development that I was taught over 30 years ago that we've no longer seeing because so many kids are debilitated.
Hmm. Well, this has entered the political fray. And of course, Donald Trump and Ben Carson got gang tackled when they enunciated even the slightest concern about vaccine safety. So it was actually pretty interesting that Trump appointed someone who's sort of his diametrical political opposite, RFK Jr., to head up a vaccine advisory board. I thought that was kind of interesting. Do you have any hopes that the climate will change as a result of that?
I mean, I think many of my colleagues are expressing tempered enthusiasm because, the vaccine and pharmaceutical lobbies are very powerful and they exert a tremendous amount of pressure. And I don't know yet how far a commission like that will get. And
it might be co-opted. It might be, you know, just sort of like, thank you very much. You know, we'll consider it and then bury the conclusions.
Right. I mean, RFK Jr. Gave a talk last week in New Jersey, and somebody came up to him and said, what do we need a safety commission for? We have a commission that you know, checks for safety. It's called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP. And his answer to the person who asked him was, that committee is filled with people mm-hmm. who have conflicts of interest, who
yes.
all have financial stakes in the money making of vaccinations. And so how can you have a fair committee to judge the safety of a product when the very success of the product is something that the people who are on the committee are invested in? So we need independent addressing of this information. And, you know, someone like me and others should not have to fear for our lives when we're actually bringing out the real science.
Do you literally feel threatened? Because, I mean, from a professional standpoint, I mean, really, I got to say, when I started entering the vaccine fray in the early part of my career, I felt physically threatened and intimidated by doctors who came down on me for advising patients not to get vaccinated. I mean, I really felt the pressure. And you're in even more of a hot seat because you're a pediatrician, which is – that's precisely the heart of the vaccine community. Is every pediatrician is solidly behind vaccination as the single biggest advancement in pediatric care.
Right. Again, I think there's a loss of thinking and an acceptance of information that's just shoved down people's throats and just repeated without thought process. And in the rare instances when I've had a chance to speak to pediatricians, they refrain from continuing the conversation with me because they can't tolerate
right.
the information that I'm offering. It's impossible. It's like putting a wooden nickel in a slot machine.
Yeah.
It just doesn't compute.
Yeah, it's a whole different paradigm.
Okay, yeah, and it's not like I'm ramming it down their throats. I'm just offering them information and saying, can you explain this to me? And they just walk away.
Yeah, okay. It shatters their belief system. All right, so obviously, we've just touched upon this because there's so many ramifications to this. There's so many different vaccines. There's so many different issues associated with vaccine safety. But I think we did a really nice job of encapsulating some of the main concerns, and you really articulate them beautifully. Where can listeners get more information? Because you have a website that's chock full of information.
Right.
And some of your many talks and papers are located there.
Yeah, I have a website, Dr. Palevsky, P as in Peter, A-L-E, V as in Victor, S as in Sam, K-Y as in yellow.com. I have newsletters that go back years. I have some articles on my website. I have a Facebook post, Lawrence B. Palevsky, M.D. And I have videos there, interviews that I've done. And there will be a new series coming out in the spring of 2017 by the makers of the series who did The Truth About Cancer. They're doing a 7-part series on the truth about vaccines. So that and I was interviewed for that series as well. So again, the only thing that I try to do is offer information, ask questions, and ask people to think and look at the science. And it takes a lot for someone who is stuck or dogmatic about a concept and to look further, because they may have to actually recognize that either they're wrong or that they were actually harming children. And so I'm just interested in offering information, getting people to think and to start having a larger conversation, because that's what's needed. We need a larger conversation, and we're missing it. And our children are suffering because the number of cases of immune and neurological dysfunctions and autoimmunity are just increasing every single day.
Well, that's a real clarion call, and I really compliment you on your courage and fortitude in bringing these facts to light, and also in your relentless pursuit of scientific truth, because too often I think physicians lockstep in terms of guidelines. And we in our medical training, as you said, we're taught to be scientists, we're taught to think, and we're taught to be advisors to patients on which aspects of medical advancement and technology are safe and appropriate for them. And I think that's the role of the physician, not to be someone who just dispenses medicine, but does a critical evaluation of the options available to patients. So that you certainly embody that. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Dr. Lawrence Palevsky. His website, drpalevsky, P-A-L-E-V-S-K-Y.com. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.